Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
There is a Holocaust Museum in Chicago, and apparently the Holocaust Museum is requiring not only staff and folks who work there, but people who want to visit the museum to show proof of vaccination and mask all the way down to 2 years of age.
Wow. Wow.
The Holocaust Museum. I mean,
you would think they would be more likely than the average person to kind of recognize some of the signs of potential slide towards genocide.
Segregation, persecution, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. There are stages towards genocide, and some people disagree as to whether there's 8 stages or 10 stages. Depending on which website you go to, you'll see a different set of stages.
Yeah.
But there are people out there in the world that will tell you that what's going on right now, depending on where you are, I mean, different parts of the world are further along this list than others, but every part of the world, for the most part, that has been doing this COVID crackdown stuff, they're taking the steps.
I think I've seen 3, maybe 2, I don't remember how many. It's at least 2 different, we'll say, survivors.
Of the actual Holocaust,
you mean? You know, who have said and come out and said, y'all better take a look at what's going on because this is, you know, sort of what went on back then. Vaccine exceptions apply for students 18 or under that are attending a school field trip. Teachers and school chaperones are not exempt from the vaccine requirement. How does that make any sense? Right?
None of this makes sense. It's all completely arbitrary.
And I'm laughing because I can't believe that I'm reading this.
Well, that's the only way you can process absurdity. I mean, once absurdity is so blatant, you have to laugh at it. Otherwise, you will be depressed and you'll want to kill yourself.
I had to double check and make sure that this wasn't like, you know, a parody website or some
the
sort
Onion
of a Babylon
or something,
Bee.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, one of
you
those
know, to,
kind of things.
To be fair, the Babylon Bee has taken the throne from the Onion at this point.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I think that line was crossed probably within the last couple of years. The Onion has gotten, it's just gotten too one-sided.
Yeah.
Like, the Onion used to hit all sides. They back in the day, the Onion's been around for decades, but it started in Wisconsin, didn't it?
I don't know.
I feel like it started in Madison or something like that.
It may have.
But it was a college town, some college town. And anyway, it used to just hit all sides with just the most biting satire. Now it's just got kind of this lefty feel, and it's gotten lame. Like I still subscribe to their weekly emails, just kind of little summaries with the headlines. And I used to get like at least a couple good laughs out of just reading the headlines.
Right.
I don't get them anymore. I think Chicago did just mandate vaccine passports, but I suspect they did this on their own volition. But that is an interesting maybe detail to this story because I believe the mayor of Chicago did announce vaccines would be required for indoor activities. I don't know when that goes into effect, but that might be one little twist. But regardless, you would still think that even if the government was mandating it, that the Holocaust Museum would still refuse to, like, shouldn't they refuse to go along, put their feet in the mud, so to speak, and say, no, we've seen this before, we're not going to enable this?
It's apparently in Skokie, Illinois.
So it's outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
So then, no, there is no government mandate in that case.
Right.
All right, so the 8 stages of genocide, and some websites say it's 10 stages. This is actually coming from right here in our very own Keene, New Hampshire, where they have an academic Holocaust, I think, division or museum or something like that here on the college campus. There's like a whole section of the campus devoted to this.
Keg stand?
Yeah, that's right, Keene State College.
Huh.
So I'm not going to go through the whole description here, but just generally the 8 different stages. Number 1 is classification. So you have to distinguish people, they say here, into us and them.
You are anti-vax.
Yes.
You are anti-vax, and therefore you are evil. You are responsible for spreading the virus, and you are responsible for me getting the COVID even though I'm vaccinated, et cetera, and so on.
A pro-choicer is now an anti-vaxxer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's...
because you're either with us or against us, Captain.
That's something that I don't... there's not really a term for it that I'm aware of. If... there is, please give us a call. But it's when government sort of co-opts a thing and creates new language around
governments
it.
Governments are all about that.
I know. I really hate that.
Yeah.
And there should be a term for that when governments do this, because that is what has happened. Now,
Legalfy?
Yeah.
They take words and they redefine them.
Statify? Or, mm-hmm, you know, tyrantify? I don't know.
Number four, organization. Genocide is always organized, usually by the state. Special army units are armed and trained. Now, you know, we're not seeing people going out and being hunted down and killed at this stage in the game, but we are, in places like Australia, seeing people being rounded up by the military, by the Australian Defense Force, and taken physically to a place against their will.
Yep.
So that's happening.
Oh, and there's also been vaccination sites manned by nothing but military personnel.
They just put the tennis star, Djokovic, or whatever his name is, in a facility, a detention facility, for this weekend and presumably longer.
Outside of Australia, like in the U.S., they've had vaccine sites where if you wanted to go and get a vaccine, you could go, and it was administered by military personnel.
We're in some dire straits here.
No doubt.
It is hard to, you know, shed love on mankind in, you know, the times that we live in.
Yes, sir. I was an ICU nurse at the last of my career. I tried to get it all in, experience the whole thing. I did, retirement center. And I did mental health. We had most of it was drug abuse and alcohol problems. And then there was some bipolar schizophrenia. And then I moved on med-surg and telemetry and wound up in ICU.
Okay.
Anyway, so, yeah, I have a lot of experience. But my thoughts, we survived all of it with, you know, protection, you know, PPE and all that. So anyways, but the thing is, I was thinking, this virus or another virus, if there was another virus, and, you know, people are talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is all nightmarish. So what we need, I'm an inventor now. I'm in my fourth career. I'm 63 years old. I'm in my fourth career. I'm an inventor. I have only one patent now. It's a flosser. It's a tooth flosser. I just got it in the process. It's up for sale for $2 million.
There are filters already. It's called your nose hairs.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Mother Nature has given you naturally occurring filters in the human body to prevent things, foreign objects, and, you know, that kind of a thing from.
Yeah, there's a system in there.
There's a system in there. So.
And there's a lot of people who would tell you, now they don't get, like, they can't express themselves on platforms like Twitter or YouTube. For instance, Robert Malone was the recent doctor who got banned off of Twitter, and then the video of, interview of his with Joe Rogan was banned off of YouTube.
Yep.
Of course, it's available on Odyssey, by the way. You can get to Odyssey.
And who is he? Let's remind our listeners who Robert Malone is.
He's a high-ranking doctor who's worked for the government.
Well,
he's creator of the mRNA, right?
That's the important part, is he created the mRNA.
Yes.
And has been banned.
And people don't want to hear what he has to say, because he will tell you.
That's like not talking to the Wright brothers about flight.
Yeah. He'll tell you. One of the things he'll tell you, and that he did say, I watched a portion of the Rogan interview. It's 3 hours long, but I watched some of it. He points out that there are over 100 studies that make it pretty crystal clear that natural immunity, that is to say someone who has gotten COVID and beaten COVID, which is, of course, almost everyone who gets it, that they have a stronger immunity against COVID than any of the multi-vaccinated people.
Surprise!
Yeah.
I don't want to get too technical, but me and my wife were having sex, and then we woke up, and we don't know our names, we can't see, we're like totally lost. The only thing
how do you know she's your wife?
Well, I don't know. I think it was through the CB, and I think the battery's running low because I just lost contact with her.
The CB radio?
So I'm here alone now. Yeah.
What's her handle?
I just remember. Tiger.
Tiger. Have you tried doing a radio check, asking for Breaker 1-9?
Yeah, but I think the batteries ran out in the radio.
Okay, so you had sex with someone who you believed to be your wife, she left.
Yeah, that's my memory. Yeah,
and you knew that she was available on the CB radio, or you never met her in the first place and you just imagined it?
Well,
I'm not real clear.
Memories. I have these memories, but now all things are slowly being lost.
Oh, man, that sounds really frustrating.
I'm receiving you at 1690 in Port St. Lucie, and I'm just looking for your help because you know electromagnetic spectrum.
All right, let's get to some facts. When did this happen?
That's a problem. I lost track of time, space time.
So this could have been this evening. This could have been 5 years ago.
Yeah, it could have been, but it's dark now. I'm in the dark.
It sounds like it.
This pandemic, I think, is coming to an end now because, you know, when it starts to the disease starts to generalize and get weaker and weaker, and then everybody has it, and it's really, and it just weakens out like people getting over a cold, and that's what's going to happen, I think, in the very near future if it's not happening already. And then the next thing I was thinking of is politically, we're going to start swinging back toward the right because it's only a tiny fraction that's really pushing things the way they are right now, and I think there's a lot of manipulation going on, even for them to do it to the degree that they're able to do it up to this particular point in time. But in the future, let's say 2022, after the 2022 election, I think things are going to change. But
I don't think things are going to change.
Well, things are going to change, but. You know, are they going to change for the better?
I don't think they're going to change in that the government isn't going to get any smaller. The government's going to keep on its path of getting bigger, more oppressive, and more intrusive, and more expensive. And it doesn't matter to me whether it's the Republicans running it or the Democrats running it. We've seen plenty of evidence that it doesn't matter one whit.
Well, they're going to have to get a lot better at lying and cheating then, because the people of the United States are not going to take this too much longer. They're going to vote.
I don't believe that either.
I'm an immunologist, and this fits in with your eight stages, mm-hmm. and I've worked for the government for these many decades, and Department of Defense, and when Dr. Malone came out and he mentioned his technique for his supposed vaccine, mm-hmm. I noticed that this was not Louis Pasteur classic effective vaccine technique, which is the way you do a vaccine, period, end of story. I mean, but it was recombinant DNA. Okay, so they add in the vax a thing called the mRNA supposed vaccine, a RNA transcriptase, and what it did with a little lethal spike protein segment of DNA is if you just give it one time, it gives a brief boost of your immune system. It gooses it to basically fight back the spike protein. However, past that point, you're creating a saturation process of cascading metastasis of the lethal spike protein. Basically, what this infers, this is a bioweapon. It's called synthetic cancer. Okay? Whoa. And it is a crime against humanity. That's why Dr. Malone jumped in real quick to say, don't take it more than once.
Sarah, you said you're working on a women's only homeless shelter. And I was just asking you about your experience as a lady in a homeless shelter. You spent some time. How long did you live in a homeless shelter?
Well, actually, I was living in homeless shelter all across the country. I mean, mm-hmm. Boston. I stayed in every shelter, including the one here, the jail. The jail
like
shelter.
A homeless tour or something?
Well, I mean, this is. I mean, when I traveled, that's where I wound it up. So I was in a homeless shelter all over the place to know.
Too poor to afford a good hostel?
No, I don't have that kind of money. But the thing is to know that other states, they have women-only homeless shelters. Mm-hmm. They know that there's a lot of problem that arises when they put the women and men really close to one another. So the ones here, they do have a separate dorm. The men sleep separate, the women sleep separate. But mm-hmm. the thing is, the corridor, the jail hall where you have to, they actually have to escort women at like five at a time with another escort. I mean, with another woman staff. But one day, some guy was trying to talk to me at the water fountain, yapping to me that he wants a massage or something. I almost threw a cup of water and I was ready to just give him a shower.
He was a thirsty dude.
Pestering me.
There are probably guys who want to hire a prostitute, and, you know, there are those guys. And then there are probably some other guys who would prefer not to pay for the prostitute. And if they can, you know, take some lady who's down on her luck and, you know, feed her and give her a place to stay, and she does it all voluntarily, I really don't see what the problem with that is. I mean, are you telling me there's... You're not saying there's like a criminal act going on. You're just saying that you don't like that some women are using the fact that they're women to make themselves a little more comfortable.
Well, here's my thing is that they're, to me, the women are victimized, in my opinion, because they're on the streets because they have mental illness. They were abused. They were sexually molested. They were beaten. They were verbally abused. They have low self-esteem.
There's no reason they wouldn't have those things happen to them in a state-run homeless shelter either.
Fact.
But the thing is that the way, for example, where they feed, it's always they feed women and men together. So then the people that have homes are looking for these crazy women. They loiter around looking for these, for the opportunity. And to me, I'm a woman. In my perspective,
I mean, if you're looking for a crazy woman, you can find them.
There are better places than the homeless shelter to find crazy women. Although, you know, if you want to aim low.
I got to touch real quick on Sarah's heartache. And then I also want to go to the Constitutional Convention before the end of it, if you boys bear with me.
Okay.
Let's see. Yeah, as far as Sarah, towards the end of the Obama administration, he abolished all the nut houses and put the loonies on the streets. And so there was a lot more homeless and a lot more heartache. And, you know,
how could Obama abolish crazy wards? I mean,
I don't remember what he did. I mean, I wasn't.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So the federal government doesn't.
At the point,
they might have funded some of them, but ultimately they're run by the state.
That's how they do it. That's how they do it. They relinquish their funding and all of a sudden it disappears. Nobody can make any money anymore. But anyway, so, you know,
I buy that.
Well, I don't know. Crazy people got to go somewhere to get themselves a peanut butter sandwich. I don't know what you're going to say.
I'm just saying, I don't know if I buy that they're closing the homeless shelters. I've not heard of that happening around here.
The crazy house.
No, not the shelters, the insane asylum.
Oh, okay.
They put the loonies on the streets. They shut them all down.
I'm pretty sure they didn't close the New Hampshire hospital that does that here. But maybe that happened in your town. I don't know. But go ahead.
Yeah, there was one that did go under here. But, yeah, I heard a news blip here and on this coronavirus. There was a flu that went through about 20 years ago. And evidently, if you were hit with that one, you probably got the natural immunity that most people got that have gotten the other variants.
Anyone who supports choice on the vaccine is an anti-vaxxer. And then that leads right into dehumanization, which is to say that all the anti-vaxxers are not really humans. So you've seen this in the clear hypocrisy of the leftists, who on one hand say they support universal health care, except for those people that won't get the vaccine.
Yeah, if you don't get the vaccine, you don't deserve health care.
Yeah, and they literally are. There actually are people out there dehumanizing the people who are questioning towards the vaccine. They are saying that they are awful and they want to be they should be punished and locked up and killed. Some of them have even said they should die, that they feel good when they hear that somebody dies if they were anti-vax. Sick stuff. So that's the first three. Then organization. We've certainly seen plenty of organizations surrounding this now with vaccine passports, lockdowns. Unvaccinated people are now locked down in the Northern Territory of Australia.
That's so sick.
Extreme lockdown there. Quarantine camps, mandatory detentions. Number five, polarization. Extremists drive the groups apart. Hate groups broadcast polarizing propaganda. Laws may forbid intermarriage or social interaction. We've definitely seen barriers, for instance, in certain places where if you're unvaccinated, you can be on one side. If you're vaccinated, you can be on the other.
You know, the vax section or the non-vax section.
Yep. We're through six out of the eight stages here, and they're all in play to some extent or another at this point. Again, just without the death lists. Number seven, extermination begins and quickly becomes the mass killing legally called genocide. So clearly we're not there yet.
And I hope that we never get first.
And I hope that we never get there. But if you look at Australia, they have taken away those people's guns for the most part.
Somebody was asking me, why do you think Australia is as bad as it is? They took away their guns. That's why.
It definitely does not help.
I'm really seriously afraid for the people of Australia because every time in history when a government takes away people's guns, a whole bunch of people die.
Yeah.
Every time.
And then finally, the eighth stage is denial, which I would say, it says here it follows the genocide. I think we're in the midst of denial. Like the people denying that the steps are going on, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's literally people who've been through this, as you pointed out, like actual survivors of the German Holocaust, who've said, yeah, it's happening again. Oh, yep, clear, crystal clear, it's happening. And then, of course, there's plenty of people say, no one's getting killed here. This is for helping. We're helping people. And they're going to deny their way all the way into, you know, internment camps, which they already have, by the way. They already have those in Australia.
From Reason.com, St. Louis taxpayers paid a lot to run a money-losing streetcar. It could cost them even more to shut it down. The Federal Transit Administration says St. Louis officials either need to get its loop trolley back up and running or return $37 million in federal funds.
Yikes.
Yeah. In a paradox only the federal government could produce, St. Louis officials are having to decide whether they want to spend money reviving the city's long-troubled, currently mothballed trolley line or lose even more money shutting it down permanently. Late last month, media outlets reported on a letter that the Federal Transit Administration sent St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones, saying that local officials had until February to come up with a plan to get its 2.2-mile loop trolley back up and running or else return the $37 million in funds the federal government provided for the project.
Or else what?
Well, let's find out, shall we? This is only the latest setback in the long, sad saga of the St. Louis streetcar. The trolley started operational life in 2018, 6 years behind schedule.
At about one streetcar? It's $37 million for one car?
The trolley.
Around?
The trolley. Singular. Started operational life in 2018.
Six years
behind schedule and about $10 million over budget. The streetcar was then mothballed in December of 2019 after county officials.
Wow. So they just took it off the road.
They were like, yeah, we'll just, you know, throw it in the garage or something.
Okay.
You know, I don't know what mothballed technically means, but
it's collecting mothballs in a garage, right?
So it was mothballed after county officials refused the trolley operator's request for a $700,000 bailout to keep the system running into 2020.
Wow.
The Loop Trolley's website says it's currently shut down to help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
But that's not true.
Because I bet you a lot of people got COVID-19 from riding the frickin' trolley. Mm.
Have they shut down the city bus system, too?
How about taxis? They shut
and
those out? No.
Those things are usually losers as well, by the way. It's important to point out that city-run transportation systems tend to lose money. Mm. Some of them lose hard, like big time, and they're subsidized. Almost all of them are probably subsidized. But it sounds to me like this one was being subsidized even harder than the city bus system, and they just said, you know what, we're going to shut this thing down, which is rare, right? Like, it's rare for a government to actually stop a government program.
Well,
but now...
And, or did it?
Mm-hmm.
All of these examples recommend against reviving the loop trolley, but the FTA's ultimatum has St. Louis officials in a bit of a bind. Mm. Reviving the streetcar will obviously require officials to find additional operating funds.
A $37 million handout came from the federal government, but there were strings attached. Surprise, surprise. The federal government says if you don't keep running the trolley... And I don't know if there's like some sort of minimum amount of years that they have to do it for, but in this case, it started in 2018.
Yep.
So it's still pretty recent. And the federal government came to them after they shut it down because it was blowing through money like crazy. It wasn't even getting 10% of the revenue that they expected it to get after spending $37 million federal dollars, taxpayer dollars on it. The federal government came to the city and said, oh, we heard that you shut down the trolley we paid for. Well, you're going to need to turn it back on or else. You have to pay back $37 million. And if you don't, or even if you do, we may choose not to give you any more federal money in the future. So now the city government goons are basically saying, all right, well, we're throwing $1 million a year into this thing and it's going down a hole, but we don't want to lose future federal money, so we better keep paying into this crazy trolley.
Now think about this for just a second. $37 million. The sell to the business owners, the downtown community here, the sell that the government said was, oh, we're going to have this cool trolley thing, and it'll help bring more customers, and it'll make our downtown a little more cool, and like people want to come and ride the trolley and then visit your establishments along the route. That was the sell, right? $37 million later, mothballed. I like the idea that you have to continue operating it if you get federal funding. Otherwise, what's to stop an entity from applying for federal funding and then shutting it down, says Feigenbaum. There have to be some consequences or the taxpayer is going to get screwed worse than they already are. Still, he says...
You're going to get screwed one way or the other.
Well, in this case, both ways. Mm-hmm. Still, he says, the threat of losing federal funds for future transit projects incentivizes local and state governments to milk taxpayers in order to keep zombie transportation systems few people ride alive. And that's what this is. It's a zombie transportation system. Feigenbaum says federal transit officials need to adopt more objective criteria around ridership and financial sustainability when doling out grants to localities to avoid...
What they need to do is go away.
Well, I agree.
And stop stealing people's money. Leave the money in the town of San Francisco, or San Diego, or sorry, St. Louis.
St. Louis.
That's what we're talking about here. I knew it was an S. St. Louis. Leave their money alone. Let them make their own decisions, because the St. Louis government's going to screw it up anyway. You don't need to make it worse by adding the federal government layer to it. That's what independence would help with. You'd have less insanity and ridiculous boondoggle situations like this.
But wait, there's more.
Sure.
You asked when we were at commercial, like, what program funded this? It's called the Urban Circulator Grant Program, which provided the bulk of federal funding to St. Louis's streetcar, vetted grant applications based on hard-to-quantify criteria like livability.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.